Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history podcast created by me, Professor Greg Jackson. Listen to History That Doesn't Suck on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Hike! Hike!
Dan Wiederer.
You've got a guy with credentials, you got a guy with some qualifications, and now there's just, when done at its best, provides a level of steadiness and stability that helps create and stimulate success.
On-air contributor for 670 The Score.
Listen, we're not going to accept the status quo. We are going to push for more. We are going to strive for more.
Co-host of the Take the North podcast.
We're going to take the North and never give it back.
Dan Wiederer with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Bear down. Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Always fun to talk to Dan Wiederer. He joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. Dan, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Doing well.
Oh, we're living the dream, and it's always good to get the Bears up and running, and I think it's especially enticing this year, just given the new head coach. And man, he was excellent again yesterday.
Oh yeah, and we've got May practice footage to overreact to, so we've got several months on this runway to the regular season to go into it. I have been enjoying Ben since he got here in terms of the back and forth in the media room and his ability to kind of hit things head on and give you answers that mean something, and then we kind of learn about this team a little bit at a time.
Dan, you're reasonable, you're rational, you're also demanding on that beat. You've been on it for a long time. What do you want to hear next about this story, if you want to hear anything at all as it pertains to Caleb Williams?
Yeah, I want to hear Caleb's take on everything. I mean, a little bit surprising, a little bit disappointing that they didn't make the decision to make him available yesterday. Sounds like he may not be available next week either. And so now all of a sudden you're giving this story life into June, and you're giving it oxygen into June. And the next time that Caleb talks, it becomes a national conversation again. And so as an organization, you've made that decision to keep yourself in the public light in a situation that's a little bit uncomfortable. I don't think it's a huge, you know, bombshell thing that we're dealing with here, but you do want to know that the quarterback has present day thoughts on his new coach, on the new leadership of the building, on his desire to be in Chicago with the Bears, and his opportunity to go attack this process of trying to become one of the best quarterbacks in the league. So I think that's the next step here. I did applaud Ben yesterday for getting out in front of it, addressing it before he was asked a single question about it. You'd want the quarterback to do the same, to just kind of set the record straight and give you his present day perspective on where things are headed.
How much tape are they watching together now? I mean, you would imagine that as you start, I believe his first news conference came out and said that, that you got to know the quarterback and the play caller need to be on the same page. He needs to know how I see the game, what I'm thinking. And I'm sure that's part of the process. He said they were going to do it. Do you know if that's ongoing?
Right. I'd like to know a little bit more from Caleb about that as well. Yeah. You know, I know Ben said yesterday that, look, he's got a process that's a little bit of a compilation of things he's done at all of his stops across the league, and a process of watching film that he believes in. And obviously this relates to the trust and buy-in that those two have to form together, right? Like, they both have to believe in each other. They both have to trust each other. And it comes in a lot of different forms over these next several months to get this thing up and running properly. You're trying to create like that constructive growth environment. And that's what's important for Caleb Williams going forward. And I think, as I've said a couple of times, that Caleb has to take ownership of this as well. And that like, he can't have his hand held through all this. You are now the number one pick in the NFL draft and a professional quarterback who's going into year two. And if you don't know how to watch film on a certain day, you need to pick up your phone and ask somebody, like, what am I looking at here? What do I need to do? And you need to put in work habits and routines that work to bring out the growth in you. It's up to the Bears to guide him, and then it's up to Caleb to follow that guidance.
What I like about Ben Johnson as well is that he's pretty open about him finding himself as a head coach, learning things about his approach, and maybe it comes across as fiery or detail-oriented or whatever the case is, whatever word you want to use. But I like the fact that we're watching this unfold, and he seems to be learning things about himself as well, even though it is only the second OTA or day of install. What are you learning about Ben Johnson, head coach?
Well, look, I think you make a good point that he is very aware that this is the first time he's been in this role and that it's going to take some time to find the exact comfort zone that he wants to be in and the exact sort of groove that resonates with the guys that he's trying to lead. I think that Ryan Poles said something very early on that from afar he sort of appreciated Ben as this brainy offensive mastermind. And then very quickly when you get to be around him and you get to know him, there's a competitive edge that's there every single day. We saw that yesterday in the practice where, you know, he's got a level of demand to him, a level of fire to him that is real. And now it's a matter of figuring out how that resonates and exactly the impact that it has on the players. But I think it's fun to feel that competitive edge, because for guys that really want to go someplace different inside that building, I think it becomes infectious. And it's kind of one of those, you know, let's go kind of things where you get some fire and some fuel to that. Now, how long that lasts and how you can sustain that over a long period of time, that's a big question for that.
You know, I don't know that that anything that goes on in day two of install is going to resonate through the season. But we did hear from a couple of players a year ago, they want to be coached. We want to be coached. We should be coached harder. Coach us. And he was kind of going after some people. Now, the guys that were talking like that are gone, oddly enough. But what was your takeaway from just the general demeanor of the coach?
Molly, I think it's demanding, and I think it's very detail-oriented. And I think folks in Detroit will tell you that was a part of who Ben was there. What I love is in Detroit, it came with proven success. And the role he was in as offensive coordinator and play caller, he was at the top of his game. And so he has results that give him credibility. And when he is very demanding, he can point to the 68 touchdowns the Lions scored during the regular season on offense last year and say, guys, this is why I'm detail-oriented, because it creates fireworks shows on game day. And so he's got to get that to resonate with this group as quickly as he possibly can. The other part of it, though, is I think Ben over time has also learned that when you're being very demanding and detail oriented with your players and coaches, you have to know when to turn the screw back a quarter turn, right? And not be overly demanding where you drain everybody and everybody's exhausted at how micromanaged they are. And so there is a tightrope you have to walk with that. And it's something that Ben did well in last season in Detroit, obviously, and it's something that he's going to have to figure out in a new role here at Halas Hall.
I believe you and Mark Grody are dropping an episode of Take the North podcast. Find podcasts later today, Dan, and I think you're doing a live version of that tomorrow on the Midday Show together. Maybe you will discuss some things that were personnel-related hints yesterday. I'm curious what you think and how much we should read into Kurron Amagaji lining up with the number ones at left tackle.
Who?
Noah Sewell lining up as a strong side linebacker with the number one defense.
Who?
And Ozzie Tripillo still being the guy that they're looking at left tackle with the second team.
Yeah, well, it's May 22nd now. That was the May 21st practice. I'm not surprised that the rookie second-round pick has not ascended to be a starter in the first week that the team's together. I would take much more note of what these pecking orders look like when we're in the first week of August, right? And so this is all just an orientation process, and the veterans are always going to get sort of that nod in the early going as the rookies get their heads on straight and their feet on the ground and try to figure out where things are headed. Look, like there's a long way to go before we know who the starting left tackle for week one is going to be for the Bears, similar at the linebacker position. So I don't read much into that. Another little note yesterday, Luther Burden not out there. You know, as we're talking about second round picks, he's dealing with a soft tissue injury per Ben Johnson, something to keep an eye on when we're back out there next week and the week after that and the week after that. Kyler Gordon was absent yesterday. Not sure why. We didn't get an answer on that one. So a handful of guys to keep tabs on. But right now, the depth chart is what it is, and when we get into training camp, it'll have a lot more relevance.
So I don't know I don't know that there will be eight captains, but if I were appointing captains, which might be a way around avoiding whether people are voted into the position or not, I would definitely have Grady Jarrett as a captain after hearing him yesterday. Loved that. And Joe Tooney, I think. You could have a captain that's actually an offensive lineman. Even with eight, they didn't have one. That would be kind of cool. And there may be more, but it seemed like there was improved leadership, at least from the podium stuff I saw.
Yeah, and two different proven veterans there, Mully. Like, Tooney is a guy that since they traded for him, they've talked all about how much he can lead. And his leadership style is very much watch me. You know, this is the example of being a professional. If you have questions about certain things that you're seeing on film or certain things that you're looking at from a defense or certain things we're supposed to do on offense, come ask me. I'm approachable. I want to show you the right way. Grady Jarrett's voice, man. Like, and that dude is a presence. And every time we've had a chance to talk to him, you get a little bit more excited because that's a guy whose passion is very, very obvious when he talks about the game, when he talks about his desire to win. And I couldn't imagine a better option as a in the trenches, mean, tenacious, passionate guy to have as one of your engines going into 2025. So, yeah, I would definitely put him on the top of the list as leaders.
I love the whole thing with Jervon Dexter calling him up. I think that's a brassy phone call, right? You know, hey, big guy, why don't you come work out? I'm just saying. I'd sure, be a little bit intimidated.
But if his reputation is that he's welcome
to
those
question.
Kinds of things, you would be more receptive to something like that.
And the other thing I liked about what Grady said yesterday is, like he's going to be asked to be leading Shamar Turner as well. And he said, like, I want Shamar to understand that he needs to see me as an equal, not as this guy that's, like, way above him. And you don't need to be meek and timid around me or quiet around me when we're in the weight room. Like, I need you to juice me up as much as you need me to juice you up. Yeah. And so, like, that being open to that and just being just that, I mean, you guys felt it, right? Like, from afar, the personality that Grady Jarrett has is going to resonate with a lot of guys. And so just lean into that and let it take you someplace.
The turn of phrase juice me up is unnecessary, Dan.
Dan likes the juice. Dan's a juice guy. Dan's a big juice guy.
Like that's my deal. I'm a juice guy.
So Dan, this week also included, obviously, I know you followed it, the Forged in Foxborough behind the scenes video of the Patriots draft night experience. And day two, they considered trading with the Bears. The Bears reportedly had offered a seventh-round pick to move up one spot. Travion Henderson was the object of their desire, reportedly. They didn't do that. They ended up with Kyle Manungai in the seventh round and certainly Luther Bird in the third in the second round. What did you think of that information? What did you think of that offer from Ryan Poles? Because it seems to me if you really wanted to move up, you might have offered more than a seventh-rounder.
Yeah, you could have sweetened the deal a little bit. Obviously, you felt okay about your contingency plans. But there are things that happen on draft weekends that like 5 minutes after they happen, you go, damn, you know, wish we could have pulled X, Y, or Z off. And I think that might be one of them for the Bears, understanding what they were looking at in this running back class and with Henderson specifically. I wrote about that immediately after the draft, about just kind of how that running back board danced away from them. And that was the moment where it kind of danced away from them the most, you know. And so is what it is, and you pivot and you work with what you've got, and then you try to squeeze results out of it. By the way, on the topic of juice, there was maybe somebody can find it in your audio archives. There was a question to Gronk on one of those Hallis Hall conference calls years ago about Julian Edelman, and he said, "Oh yeah, man, that guy brings the juice." And it was one of the best Gronk quotes that we should probably attach to something here on the station.
It's certainly stuck in your memory.
Oh, that's hysterical. That's hysterical.
That's great.
What, Dan, when you look at them, and I mean, I'm not talking about looking at what you saw yesterday, just at the overall picture, when you look at the depth chart, where do they need an improvement? Do they need an improvement? Is it easier to get another running back from somewhere else? Do you have to make a deal for a player? There are a couple of guys out there, but guys get cut too. Do you feel like that would be a position where you could improve without giving up a lot? Or would you make a big trade, you know, big signing, try to get a pass rusher in here? If you were left in charge of the bookkeeping, what would your move be?
Yeah, I mean, I think I have to get well into August and get a better feel for how this team is coming together. And look, like you guys know, we've seen, you know, Labor Day weekends where there's all of a sudden seven guys on the 53-man roster that weren't here during the offseason program. I don't think the Bears are in that state anymore, but it's a reminder that there is always an avenue in the summer to grab guys off the scrap heap, to see what other teams are doing and keep tabs on some of the guys that get cut in training camp and right before the regular season and make some moves there. I would like more depth at safety. I would like more depth on the offensive line. You know, like, I think you're going to be exploring those things. Mm. But like the Bears, I think everyone has to condition themselves. Like, they're not in position right now to go chase the Super Bowl. And so I don't think you want to like make that Khalil Mack. We're trading everything just to get this you know, season off the ground in a way that we want to. I think you have to be taking the long view here and making sure that you're building something that you can sustain success with. And they've Joe Tooney being the latest example. They've handed a lot of extension money out here in the last couple months, and so you got to keep an eye on the books.
But Tooney is an example. Tooney's kind of an example, Dan. I mean, they saved cash. They have money to spend that they wouldn't have had.
Yes, they reserve that for something.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
No question. And, but now also you've got a guy under contract for 2 years beyond this that's going to be making a ton of money. He's going to be 35 by the time that contract ends. And so you got to make sure that as you're attacking your present, that you're also keeping yourself in a healthy position for your future. And so that's kind of the balancing act that Ryan's going to have to do up there.
So when we talk about the backup quarterback position, there's an assumption, and maybe it's a proper one, that Tyson Bagent is going to be the backup quarterback. We have yet to hear from Case Keenum, Dan, or have we? And I just didn't remember what he had to say, because I'm very curious how he views his role, why he chose the Bears, and what he's looking for.
Would he watch tape with a guy?
Yes.
David, I have a page in my notebook that has all those questions scrawled in it for the first time we get to talk to Case Keenum. It has not happened yet. So we don't know that yet. And obviously, I think he's a guy that's here for the veteran guidance part of the equation. I will tell you that the best throw, single throw, that I saw on the May 21st Tuesday OTA practice or Wednesday OTA practice was Tyson Bagent to Miles Boykin. So put that in your notebook as the best throw of the day yesterday.
Dan just opened the Bagency.
There you go.
I knew you would like that.
Thank you. Thank you, Dan. Yes. There's a lot of juice for the Bagency.
You know,
should
Bet Johnson yelled at Cole Kmet at one point.
Were you okay with that, Dan?
He actually yelled at him. And I don't know if feelings were hurt, but
Dan's feelings were hurt.
Yeah.
Leave his favorite player alone.
Back off. But I said to David, I said, well, it's not like he's going to run into the building and say, we drafted his replacement, trade him. It's just, it's an install, and the guy lined up wrong, and you tell him to go over there, and I'm sure he won't make the mistake again. He's a really bright guy, Cole Kmet. But what, you know, how much does that speak to the head coach that he's kind of in this, he's in this honeymoon phase where he can go off on everybody if he wants to, not that he wants to, but because as he gets to know these guys, that might become more difficult when he knows their learning process and how good they are, et cetera.
Well, and you got to know personalities as well, and you got to understand who you can do that with and who you can't. Grody and I talked a couple months ago, and we're going to revisit it today, about these little shiny lures that Bears fans are going to want to like bite and latch onto about, there's never been a practice as intense and detailed as this. May 21st, it was the confirmation that the Bears had turned the corner and it's all fixed because they got a guy that's demanding. It's like, yeah, okay, I'm cool with the observations. Like the conclusions will wait for several months and we'll see kind of how Ben navigates this. His personality is very authentic. It's very demanding. It's very fiery, as we mentioned. And now you just have to figure out how to use that properly, because, you know, there could come a time where that doesn't necessarily click with every single guy in your room. And you got to make sure that you understand, you know, the emotional intelligence part of that, on who you can do that with, who you can't. And that'll be part of the head coach learning process.
Great job, Dan.
Great stuff, Dan. Thank you, buddy.
All right, fellas, be good.
You too.
I remember going up there one time and there was a Trestman practice, and he came out after it and he said, that was the most violent physical practice I've ever seen in the NFL. And I was like, they're in shells. And I looked at someone like, what is that? And I was told, well, he's hoping someone writes it and everyone will then believe it. I mean, come on now.
Yeah, he was definitely not a guy who you looked at and heard from and you're nodding your head in agreement
exactly.
All the time.
Yeah.
He wasn't a guy that commanded the room from day one.
Hey, we want to let you know, tonight is the night. Tune in tonight for the first ever Chicago Sky broadcast right here on 670 The Score. They host the New York Liberty at Wintrust Arena. Coverage begins at 6:45 on The Score and on the Odyssey app. And this is a special one because this is the first one. And Layla is doing the color commentary.
Yeah, Layla Rahimi doing the color commentary.
Yes.
Kylan Mills doing the play-by-play. She's a Chicago native, worked for the Pac-12 Network, the Big Ten Network, and other networks. And also, you've got Alyssa Bergamini.
Alyssa Bergamini, you hear her on the Bulls broadcast. So it's going to be an all-female broadcast team. It should be a ton of fun. There's no baseball tonight.
No baseball.
You are free to tune in. Make sure you are listening. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history podcast created by me, Professor Greg Jackson. Listen to History That Doesn't Suck on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
By the way, on the topic of juice, there was a somebody, maybe somebody can find it in your audio archives. There was a question to Gronk on one of those Hal's Hall conference calls years ago about Julian Edelman, and he said, oh yeah, man, that guy brings the juice.
Just having Edelman back, he brought the juice. He brings the juice to the locker room. I got to step up, bring some more juice.
Mully and Haw, Chicago, asking you shall receive.
Oh my gosh!
Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Brandon Fryer.
Boy, that's pretty quick.
That's pretty
work
quick.
There, pal.
Dan Weider had a good memory. Yep. Rob Gronkowski, back in his playing days, bringing the juice.
I got to bring the juice.
Got to bring the juice.
Hey, you know, a couple of sad things happened yesterday. The NFL lost one of the owners. A local guy made good.
Yes.
A native of Lincolnwood and Jim Irsay. He was, you know, talked to him a few different times on the air. He would come on the station because he went to Loyola.
He considered himself kind of a Chicago guy.
He was a Chicago guy.
He
grew up here.
He grew up here. He attended Loyola Academy.
That's right.
He always considered Chicago a special place.
Yes, he did.
And he went to Indianapolis via Baltimore, won a Super Bowl that everyone in Chicago remembers. One of the more colorful, charismatic owners, always had time for the media. And I think that it is a big loss. He was controversial for a lot of different reasons. He went through his own struggles with addiction that he was very open about.
Only 65 years old.
65 years old, Mully.
That's young.
It was young.
Crazy.
And it's sad.
And, of course, the super fan, to lose a guy like George Wendt. The Wendt's a big Southside family, great people.
Beverly.
Beverly family. I got a chance to meet his brother. His sister, of course, is the mother of Jason Sudeikis, who had the big Ted Lasso show. That was George's nephew.
Great comedy actor in his own right.
Great comedy actor. And someone sent me a cartoon, which was, you know, the back of George Wendt arriving in heaven, and the whole like heavenly the angels.
I got the same thing.
They're yelling, you know, Norm. You know, it was
where everybody
just
knows your name.
Yeah,
he was a staple on Cheers, great series, and he was a terrific actor
and did
as part of the ensemble.
Obviously, did the Bears skit and the, you
well,
know,
with,
you all know
that
that
was the origin of the Bears.
Yes,
and so when we say things like the Pope. That's where it all started.
Yes, it started with George.
So it's kind of a thread that connects him to Chicago sports forever.
No doubt about it.
And he was a guy who was a big Sox fan.
Yes, he was.
You know, and Notre Dame fan. He went
to Notre Dame. He went to Notre Dame. Domer.
he didn't last at Notre Dame.
It's pretty impressive.
But he was always a big Irish fan, and he was had a
Craig Council said the Pope couldn't get in.
That's right. And George Wendt couldn't stay, but nonetheless, he was a big Notre Dame fan for many years. And all my years in South Bend, I can remember him coming to several games, and whenever he was in town, it was a big deal.
Yeah, good stuff.
Tough loss.
You know, just 75, again, like far too young to lose someone like that. So it's just sad, but it's, you know, we should, you know, every man's death diminishes you.
So yeah, and the condolences out to both of their families because I think they have still some Chicago connections. We're getting, you know, 312 texts in. George Wendt's sister-in-law taught Spanish at Curry High School. Everybody knows somebody who has a connection.
Like I said, huge Irish-American family, just wonderful people, and big Beverly family. Sad, just sad to lose someone like that, and you know, what are you going to do? Just kind of shocking the way life marches forward, Mr. Davis.
Well, yeah, you knew that Jim Irsay had had some struggles health-wise, and some of them had been going on for years, and you would hear things. And the one thing that you can say about Jim Irsay is that in our business, you know, we look at it from a different perspective as maybe a former player. Joshua Perry was on the Chicago Sports Network last night, the Chicago lead, and he looked at it from the perspective of the next player. He spent a year with the Colts, and he was really poignant in what he remembered about Jim Irsay being hands-on. But I know people, and I know I'm sure you do too, from a media perspective, the guy always returned phone calls.
Oh, yeah.
He was accessible as they came from an ownership standpoint. He was a general manager of the Colts for a time. Hmm. He was a guy that respected every level of the operation, including the media's role in helping the local team grow, and the PR mattered to him.
Unbelievable fan of music, of rock and roll. He had the Jim Irsay band, and he would travel around, and they would add in, like, it was just like an all-star group. He collected music memorabilia like you would not believe. I mean, I believe he had a guitar from every member of the Beatles.
Oh, my gosh.
And then he bought, like, a drum kit of Ringo's for, like, $2 million just because he wanted to have it all.
He had it laid around.
He had Kurt Cobain's guitar that he played on Smell Like Teen Spirit. He owned or owns that guitar, his family does. I mean, you're talking about, like, all of these, like, kind of rock and roll, you know, incredible moments that he had the different guitars and all, big, huge fan of the guitar. So pretty wild.
Pretty wild. Big loss. Condolences to his family and the Colts community and organization.
No
certainly.
Doubt about it. Yep.
So we were talking about the Bears, and Dan Weider made a good point about it being May 21st and only the second day of install and all the things. I still find it interesting that big picture wise, there are two guys that we mentioned and he talked about. Kieran Amagaji lining up with the first team at left tackle, and Noah Sewell lining up as a strong side linebacker with the number one defense.
Right.
Molly, when Ben Johnson talks about coming in and giving everybody a clean slate, starting over,
that's a new chance for some people that haven't made an impact yet. That's two guys,
because
no doubt.
The old regime probably had seen enough in some ways.
Well,
it's
not fair to say that about Amagaji because you hadn't seen anything.
Well, you saw enough to know that he was going to be challenged.
Well, you saw him come up injured. You saw him come in injured. He had no preseason, then obviously couldn't play when he was thrown to the Wolves. So that's what you saw. But you're right. Noah Sewell seemed like he was on the edge of the roster. But now here's a guy who knows his brother very well coming in, and I'm sure that he'll get a very good look.
I am curious about that relationship, how that factors into Ben Johnson's evaluation or rapport with Noah Sewell, his obviously brother being Panay, big reason why Ben Johnson looks so smart.
Yeah, that's fair.
As the right tackle for the Lions.
Yeah. All right, we got a lot of people who want to check in, and we did. We got yelled at yesterday by a texter because we didn't get to his phone.
We got yelled at. Yeah.
We did. He had lectured. All caps, exclamation points.
When they go all caps, they know you know they mean business.
And I tried to apologize, but he said he's done listening to us. So we don't want to put Jeff, he's our buddy, listening on the Odyssey app. We don't want to put him in that position. Jeff, how are you?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. I'll never be in that position. I love listening to the score while I bake my goodies. Couple things on today's topics and kind of yesterday's topics. First of all, I agree with you, Molly. Caleb needs to get out in front of this and just make it a non-story, either to the press, hopefully to the press for the NFL team right there in Chicago, or just go on a show and say this is what it is. And other thing is also with Caleb, and you look at the quarterbacks that came out of the Lincoln Riley project. It's Caleb, Kyler Murray, and Baker Mayfield all had problems with either tape watching or reading defenses. And I'm wondering if that just was something Lincoln Riley didn't press upon these guys, as you need to learn what the defenses are doing. And the other thing I wanted to mention was in the tush push, there's some factions out there that believe Goodell was behind trying to get this thing taken off. And what will happen now is they're looking at the lineup of the center, and if the center is not perfectly aligned the way he's supposed to be per rule, much like the Kansas City Chiefs right tackle being off the line,
right.
They're going to start throwing flags to try to even the playing field, or however they want to put it. But that's the factions are saying that's the reason, or that's how they're going to try to get back at.
They could reduce it by penalizing it. Yes, that would be an overreaction. Thank you, Jeff, for the phone call.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff,
and always for listening.
Doesn't that drive you nuts, though? That one of the ways that Washington tried to deal with that was diving over the line and going offsides.
Yeah.
So they did that. Whatever, three times, mm-hmm. and you got an inch each mm-hmm. time, right? Mm-hmm. And if you jump off sides, you're going back 10 yards. That I just hate that. I don't know why, but that rule frosts me.
Well, I think it's
because one side really pays and the other side can do anything they want.
It's making a mockery of it.
That's it.
And it's exploiting it. And I think that Jeff is correct, though. The reports are that Roger Goodell wanted this to go away.
Hell yeah.
Applied the pressure and even got the Packers to be the sacrificial lamb, if you will,
no owner.
For being the team with no owner that would present it to the rest of the league for a vote. It failed to 22-10. They were two votes shy. I want to get back to what he said about Caleb. A lot of attention about when we're going to hear from Caleb. It might not be until June. Dan Weider thinks, he's not going to hear from him next week. And here's something to consider, too. I have referred to it. You have agreed with it. We've all said that when Caleb Williams walked in the door on day one, he was the de facto CEO,
sure.
the most important person and voice in that organization. I do wonder if that's changed. I do wonder if that's changed a little bit with Ben Johnson here. And I think that what this has allowed – not even allowed, that's the wrong verb. What has happened in this instance is that the Bears are telling us the strongest voice in that building belongs to the head coach.
Well, I mean, here's the thing.
Not the quarterback.
I don't want to say this the wrong way, but Ben Johnson is going to be here for 5 years. Is Caleb Williams going to be here for five years?
You can't guarantee that.
You would hope so.
Well, you hope so.
Certainly hope so.
Yes, I think the chances are he will, but point is well taken because Ben Johnson has more staying power right now than Caleb Williams.
If things go off the boil, how many years does Ben Johnson get? They're not going to – Ben Johnson's got a five-year deal at $13 million a year. They are never going to give him $26 million to walk away.
Think about that.
So think about it that way.
And they have a rookie contract.
I'd be very surprised if they gave him $13 million to walk away. I think he's here for 5 years. And I'm not saying he's not going to win and the whole thing is not comical.
No.
But who has the staying power? It's the guy making the most money among all the other than ownership.
Yes.
Put it
so
that way.
Who should have the strongest voice.
Yes.
This is the way it probably should work.
Yes.
This is the way that it works with successful organizations. You can debate who's more important. We can have that would be so much fun. Who's more important to the Bears' success after they win 10 games? Caleb Williams or Ben Johnson? Oh my gosh, I would love to have that debate in December.
Yeah. Well, we'll definitely have that debate if they only win 5 games again.
But right now, right now what we're seeing I think is Ben Johnson asserting himself consciously or not, but asserting himself as the strongest voice in the building and the most important employee on the payroll.
Let's squeeze in Vaughn. Vaughn is listening on the Odyssey app. Hey, Vaughn.
Hey, guys. Great show as always. So I got a couple points. Caleb Williams having to explain why he wanted to go to Chicago or why he didn't and play quarterback or versus going and playing for Kevin O'Connell was like me trying to explain why I'd rather go to heaven versus hell. Let's just keep it real. The second thing is, and that's just real. The second thing is, and again, I don't know, social media was nowhere near as prevalent, but you had a guy in Eli Manning that didn't just want to not go somewhere. Him and his dad engineered it. And I just don't remember everybody scuffling, looking for Eli to give an interview or, you know, all the stuff that came out with Carl Williams and, you know, Archie was able to do what he wanted to do. It was called a power move. Why the dang double standard is what I want to know.
Okay. Thanks, Bon.
Thanks, Bon. I don't know there's a double standard. Eli Manning took a lot of grief, and he's still, after having a Hall of Fame-worthy career, is still being referenced to the power play they pulled at the draft.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not like it goes away.
What's Arch do next year?
he's going to be the captain of the flag football team in 2028.
Does he need one of his uncles to jump in? All right. 312-644-6767. He's going to be the Olympian. I like it. Mully and Hans.
Sometimes historic events suck. What shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history podcast created by me, Professor Greg Jackson. Listen to History That Doesn't Suck on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sure.
What are your thoughts on the Tush Push? It's going to stick around. They've tried to, or group teams tried to overturn the vote did not pass.
Man, I tell you what, does it become an explosive play ever? Have you ever seen a tush push become an explosive play?
Does it become a first down or a touchdown?
Yeah, I like explosive play. I like big plays, so I'm not a big tush push guy myself.
Mully and Haw, that's pretty good stuff. Great exchange. Bigsy is so Bigsy.
Good music too, Brandon.
First down or a touchdown.
First down or a touchdown.
Uh-huh.
What was that answer from Ben Johnson? What are you?
Because he didn't get the answer.
Version of Bigsy's whatever.
Yeah, he gave him
whatever.
He gave him
whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
Let's try to have that noise from Ben Johnson.
That's awesome.
That'd be a good one to jump in.
I think his
whenever
point
Big says something
is well taken. He's a coach who likes explosive plays. He's in a position where he knows George McCaskey, the chairman of the board here.
Uh huh.
Is one of the owners who voted to ban it.
Yeah,
so he can't come out. What's he going to say?
He's going to say, here's what he's not going to say. He's not going to say, well, we think it's a dangerous play, or we think someone could get hurt on that, which is why George voted to ban it.
Well, he's not going to say that because there's no evidence to support it.
That's what I'm...
And Ben Johnson tends to deal with...
So he's
statistics
saying,
and stats and facts.
I prefer explosive plays. Has an explosive play ever come from that? Well, I mean, it depends on your definition
again,
of explosive.
It's a very skillful answer because it redirects the conversation.
Yes.
And he's because you sit there in the audience, and you're like, well, you know what? He's right. The tush push is not an explosive play. It's an important one, but not explosive.
I mean, it is a play that produces repeated touchdowns. I mean, God, that's explosive. That's like blowing up a game. Your defensive game plan has just been exploded by
no,
that.
No, it hasn't.
Yes, it
explosive
is.
Plays are defined as...
I know, 20-plus yards.
Yeah,
I get
right.
What he's saying.
So he's saying, you know what, they can spend their time
so he,
getting if, lower than the lowest.
If he had a tush
game
push,
plans.
He would fake the handoff and then throw it over the
yes,
top.
He would.
Okay.
I think that Ben Johnson probably loves the tush push because all the attention, and he would... Ben Johnson probably went home, driving home last night thinking, okay, this is what I'm going to do. Or if he hasn't already thought of it already, they probably have a play in the Bears playbook, which will be day 33 of install. And it'll be line up for the tush push. Everybody's going to push it, and then they'll fake it, and then they'll throw lateral, and then they'll throw another pass, and some a tackle eligible will catch it for a touchdown.
They will come up with a stumble bum push where the... Oh, the running back didn't get the... Oh, wait, the quarterback can't...
It'll be called the stumble
touchdown.
Bum scrum.
Yeah.
There we go.
You got a bite at it.
The stumble bum scrum.
He has to rhyme.
They
have to rhyme. As he's driving home, he's thinking of, how can I get Noah Sewell a touchdown?
Right. I like it when Sewells are involved in my offensive
plans. I like to
plans.
Throw to Sewells.
Yes.
How do I throw it to the defense?
I think he handled that question well.
He handles everything well.
Yeah, I do. And we're getting text here. 616, picking up major Matt Nagy vibes from Ben Johnson.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Him.
Yeah.
There you go. Thank you.
What a great answer.
That's it. Can you play that one more time? Let me get that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is it.
Good
that's
for Ben
fantastic.
Johnson.
Good
that's
for him.
Great. Yeah, he's never sounded smarter. And,
that's
the way you know what? Ben Johnson, I feel like a kindred spirit right now. Because sometimes when Brad asks me a question or responds to one, I feel like that.
Yeah.
Big time. Thanks,
yeah,
Brad. Good question. Sometimes you get a little flummoxed.
Can we get robot Biggs to answer the...
You're pretty
morning,
demanding.
Morning, what's going on?
You're pretty demanding this morning.
Oh my God! I don't know why that's so funny. To
Robot
me.
Biggs is hilarious, though.
Yeah, but we need him to say something else. We need him to say, Well, there's a touchdown or a first down.
It is an explosive play. You think it's an explosive play?
Yeah.
Do I think it's an explosive play?
Yeah.
I think, David, that it is about as successful a play as you run in the NFL. It's a very, very successful play, and that is why they tried to ban it. Mm-hmm. It had nothing to do with injury. It had to do with the success factor. The fact that teams – and again, if you want to stop the success of the play, start with the snap count. Everybody, we're going on two from the goal line.
That's a good call.
You got to go on
That's
two.
That's a good call.
Then there's no advantage even lower than low.
I was more disappointed that the seeding process was tabled. The reseeding for the playoffs.
But that's interesting. They tabled it because they knew it wasn't going to pass because there wasn't enough time to get to it.
Yeah.
And basically, they're waiting for expansion. So once they go to 18 games, then they're going to get that
expansion of the schedule.
Yes.
Not the league. Yes.
No, not the league.
I thought maybe, whoa, you know something?
No, I was saying once they start playing another game. Which
Ladies and gentlemen, the Portland.
Seems inevitable.
Timberwolves or Timber whatever. That would not be good expansion, but I think 18-game schedule is what they're waiting for.
Back to baseball.
We're
going to talk some baseball next. It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.
Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history podcast created by me, Professor Greg Jackson. Listen to History That Doesn't Suck on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.